dbkmediaservices.com.
Listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SBC Sports Talk Podcast. SBC Sports Talk is brought to you by SBCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. And now, here are your hosts, Shane Combs, Derek Webb, and Bruce Knox.
Hello, SVC fans, and welcome in to another edition of SVC Sports Talk. This is, in fact, episode 177 of the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk, and we appreciate you being with us, giving us another listen as we continue down that road of SVC Sports. Again, this is, in fact, brought to you by Triple Crown Family Fun Center. We appreciate their willingness to sponsor us all these many years. They are located at 1 Nancy Wilson Way in Chillicothe, just right behind Bridge, right off of Bridge Street, just behind the Hampton Inn. They are open 7 days a week, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m., and you can give them a call at 740-773-7529. Look them up on the web at triplecrownfamilyfuncenter.com. And they can take care of you, particularly if you have a need for something good to eat or some fun to be had, because they have all kinds of fun under one roof. We appreciate them. Well, tonight I want to introduce not two, but just one of the SVC Sports nerds, that being Mr. Shane Combs. Shane's with me tonight. How are you, Shane?
Doing great, Bruce. I know Derek covering the game here on Monday evening, Southeastern Zane Trace. Sounded like a thriller. I was going to go out, but in preparation for the show there, I just wanted to get a couple things done, and then a busy week ahead here with, I know, three girls games and two boys games, so I'm going to spend plenty of time in the gym. So didn't make it out there, but as always, appreciate Derek's updates, and if Derek's able to stop in studio with us here, we'll have him throw the headphones on, but if not, we certainly understand this evening that he was out there covering the makeup game out at Zane Trace.
Yeah, if it's not become clear earlier, we are in fact recording on a Monday night, which is a little different than typical, and I appreciate some flexibility shown by Mr. Shane Combs in rescheduling last night's normal recording session. I had to be out of town due to a death in the family, but everything is we're back and ready to roll. And while I'm thinking about it, tomorrow is a big day for Mr. Webb, and this hopefully will be published late on Monday evening, and tomorrow being the, what are we, the 24th of, yeah, tomorrow will be the 24th. Yeah, yeah. And that is, in fact, Mr. Webb's birthday. So if you happen to hear this and you want to hit him up, we'll give you contact information in a little bit when we get to that, and you can wish him a happy birthday. And, of course, we do wish him a happy birthday. Hey, there's a lot to get to, and we kind of have summarized this down into three main points of feedback before we actually get into this show. So we want to kind of talk a little bit about three things that have kind of reared their head in the feedback. First thing being the 1,000-point discussion. It's been going on, ongoing. We talked about it several weeks now, that we currently have three athletes over that 1,000-point mark.
Yeah, we do. You know, you'll remember 2, 3, 4 weeks ago, the conversation had geared up where I had some talks with people, and they're talking about in the modern day, should it be more of maybe a 1,200-point club or whatnot? And, mm-hmm. and those are great discussions that I've enjoyed having. But what's so unique about these three kids, it certainly wouldn't matter.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, Audrey Wheeler just went over the 1,200 career mark. We know the special career Ella Skeens is putting together. And then here's Dylan Swingle that just went over 1,000 the other night. And he's just a junior.
Yeah.
And as I start down through the list, you know, it's hard to say, Bruce. I mean, I certainly understand the 1,000-point discussion, but if you look across the board, whenever you start trying to project a year or two down the road, obviously you have to have some good help from the Lord above with health and injury free and so forth. But you know, we probably have some sophomores at Huntington and Elijah McCloskey and Braden Collins that you would think would be on that pace. I know with Paint Valley, you have Lexi Woods that's less than 100 points away just this year, and she's just a junior. Mm-hmm. I know that she's probably going to get there. Piketon, I'm not sure about Moore's update. I'd probably need to find that out. Obviously, Blanton's injuries hurt her on the girls' side. We mentioned Southeastern. Uniota girls, I mean, goodness, they have three or four younger kids that, you know, you don't know if it mathematically is possible, but they're certainly in the mix to do something like that. The Wyman injury, and you know, and I'm probably missing some. Obviously, on the Uniota boys side, I'd say a couple of those guards have a chance. So, you know, I think the list is only going to grow, but make no mistake about it, those three that are already there, and we're moving those kids up the list every time they play, it's a lot of fun to watch. So I've really appreciated that, and what's been neat about it, Bruce, this is one of those topics where I've talked to people in their 70s. Mm-hmm. I've talked to people in their 40s. I've talked to people in their teens. So it's a really neat topic that all the generations, I guess, you know, kind of have their opinion on it. And that's what makes it so neat to follow the history of all of our schools in the Scioto Valley Conference.
Right. And another thing we're getting a lot of feedback on the boys' side, it's obvious that several schools are making a strong case for why they have the inside track to second place.
Well, they are. You know, we talked a little while ago there about Piketon, and you know, we kind of mentioned them in the preseason, and I know a lot of people have kind of been making their case. You know, with Zane Trace winning tonight as we speak, they just went in overtime, I believe, is what Derek's last post said. So that puts them to 5-4, Paint Valley 5-4. Now Adina catches Piketon at 6-3, but keep in mind Piketon's played both their Uniota games, where Adina still visits Uniota. So, you know, I think we've been pretty consistent as I listen back to the shows. I think we've been pretty consistent. I don't know that you give anybody the edge. I think we've said all year long that the race for second's insane. Mm-hmm. I think that all of the teams have something to offer. Obviously, Adina has great guard play. They're starting to get a little bit more consistency from their front line as well. We know Piketon is getting better. Paint Valley Swingle's playing at a really high level, and then Zane Trace is still dangerous. But keep in mind something I said last week: Huntington, Southeastern, Westfall are all so capable. I mean, we've seen that. Like tonight's just another example with Southeastern. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I don't know that I'd give anybody an edge over someone else. I think it's just going to be a matter of getting yourself down to those last two or three games, and we're going to get some great head-to-head matchups. You know, you're going to get another Adina Paint Valley matchup. You're going to get another Piketon Paint Valley matchup. I mean, Adina, Piketon, Paint Valley, Zane Trace, really, it's still anybody's for the taking.
Yep. On another topic, have you been surprised at the fact the girls' league's been better than some thought it would be, and will this mean more tournament success than usual?
I don't know if surprise might be a little bit of a strong word. I mean, I think anyone who's followed the junior high and JV level, mm-hmm. Knew that Uniota and Huntington were going to be a lot better than a lot of people thought they would be.
Okay.
You know, with Uniota's junior high last year and then Huntington's JV, you know, Uniota's junior high was just completely out of place last year. I mean, they just completely had their way. They're playing at a completely different level. Huntington's JV, they go 14-0 there at the JV level too. And so you return all these kids at Southeastern. You return all these kids at Piketon. I think people knew that those, again, the Uniota Huntington teams were going to be pretty good. And then Paint Valley, I just told you they have a kid get ready to score 1,000 points their junior year. So they're obviously pretty good. And then Zane Trace's experience and so forth. So I don't know if surprise as far as success, you know, maybe, but I think there's two things for people to say. And if you've listened to the show, you've heard me say this before. You know, number one, it's just a different ball of wax in volleyball. You know what I mean? It's a situation where when you go into these sectional and hopefully district brackets, there's just far more good teams across Southeast District than there are in volleyball. You know, so one, the competition's going to be tougher. Mm-hmm. And then two, what's going to happen is because the competition's a lot better, the seeding a lot of times can get SVC teams head-to-head in their particular matchup. So we'll see. Certainly a lot of potential in these SVC schools in the bracket, but these things always come down to matchups, so we really don't know until we get to the selection Sunday and see who plays who.
All righty, let's get rolling then with this week's show. Next, we start on the boys' side this week, where one fan wants to know a few different things about our league's best team. episode 177 of SVC Sports Talk continues now. And as I kind of went to the break there, we talked about the league's best team in the boys' side right now, that being, of course, Uniota. And we've had quite a few questions come in from fans this week wanting to discuss the SVC win streak, reaching 50 straight games. Unbelievable. So, yeah. Shane, I'll put a couple questions to you about that.
Sure.
First, how crazy good is that streak?
Well, crazy good is probably a good way to say it. You know, it's crazy when you think of night in, night out, how difficult it is to go on the road and win. And you know, and it's not like in football where it's every other year or so forth. You know, the double round, you're going on the road to every gym every year. And, you know, I think if you follow basketball through all conferences, if you follow college basketball and you watch teams get in the conference play, when you especially when you're the top dog, especially when you're on a streak like this, you become everybody's national champion or state championship game. You know, it's the biggest pep rally game. It's the biggest pep section. Let's do this. It's the biggest atmosphere game. And you're going to get everybody's best shot. You're going to get every role player's career night. You're going to get just everything that team has. You're going to get a coach's game plan that maybe has nothing to lose and they're willing to try some things. And so you get all those different things. And to think that you go on the road and survive those things, it's crazy. But you know, one thing I will say, Bruce, I don't remember the exact number, but when Uniota went to Westfall last year, I remember thinking to myself about the roster in the years to come, and I thought to myself, if they win this game, it is crazy to think about where this particular streak could get. Mm-hmm. Because on paper, even a year ago, you started to ask yourself, if they can go win at Westfall, and they won a really close game, if people remember there. You know, it's not that they won't be challenged at times, but in terms of the win streak, you almost wondered this year or next year, you know, would they not be heavy favorites in every SVC game they play? So it's kind of interesting not to only follow it down the stretch here, but going into next year as well, because obviously Uniota is going to win the league. The question becomes, can they survive each tough test? You know, Adina took them into the fourth quarter there. Piketon the other night really gives them a scare. Zane Trace played them really tight. And that just comes with the territory. So, you know, it's fun to watch. But, yeah, the fan used the quotations there, crazy good. Yeah, it's pretty special. I mean, it's something that I don't know where it compares maybe in the all-time. I know the baseball streak that Uniota went on is really good. Obviously, Adina Volleyball's has rewritten the record book there. Each sport takes on its different challenges, but to do it in basketball and to reach the number that they're at now and quite frankly, the number I think they'll get to is certainly special.
I was going to say, it's not comparable really across sports, is it?
Well, we have an SVC streak page, and, you know, I'll just throw out my opinion. I don't know how everybody feels about it, but, I mean, obviously every streak on this page is incredible. But, like, when you talk about a softball program, the fact that you can throw the same kid every night, if you come across just an incredible pitcher, she can put you on a 3 or 4 year run. That doesn't mean it's not amazing. I'm just saying that, you know, that you can make sense out of it.
Right.
When you look at basketball, Southeastern was the old streak at like 32. That was the Chris Skaggs teams, and they were really, really good. And then now Uniota's obviously passed that up, and they're rolling along. The one that I made reference to that I thought was phenomenal, obviously the Adina Volleyball, you know, when they went to the 98 straight. But again, there's always, you know, probably only 4 or 5 games. The nature of volleyball, especially now that they've gone to rally scoring, the nature of it in terms of them getting beat 3 out of 5, there's probably only a realistic opportunity of that happening 4 to 5 times a year, maybe. The streak that I was referring to was the Don Neff Uniota Sherman's baseball team, 38 straight games, because in baseball, and I'm sure I'm biased to baseball, but in baseball, it is crazy to think with the inning rules, the rain, you play Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, maybe, you play a lot of different things. To go on a run like that in baseball is something. So obviously not you can't say that all of those streaks aren't incredible, but that's just my take on some of them. But keep in mind, this Uniota basketball streak's not done yet. You know, we may be adding another, 20-25 games of this thing before it's said and done. That doesn't mean they could lose this weekend, but that's just my opinion is that they've got a chance to really run this number up quite a bit.
I'm sure the pitch count will have something to do with your streaks in baseball coming up, and we'll talk about that when the calendar turns up a little bit more. Another observation from a fan: Uniota seems a little tight lately when I watch them. Do you think the streak is a bad thing in any ways in terms of pressure on them going into the tournament?
You know, Bruce, I think this is a common question you get in sports. Anytime a team's undefeated, they'll ask the question, you know, if they would lose, do you think it would take the bullseye off a little bit? Do you think it would relax them a little bit? Do you think it would take a little pressure off? Yeah, I don't know that I buy that. I mean, I think that Uniota still becomes a really big game regardless. I think I kind of look at what Coach Cal says at Kentucky. I'm a big Kentucky basketball fan. He'll tell those guys, you know, but he recruits them in. If you don't want to be a Kentucky bullseye, if you don't want to be everybody in the SEC's national championship game, if you don't want to be hated by everyone, if you don't want to play in tough environments and under tight situations, then don't come here. You know, so it's one of those things. That'd probably be my message to Uniota. I mean, you know, obviously there's kids over the last 4, 5, 6 years that have made the choice that they want to go be a part of the Uniota basketball program. Certain kids have decided, hey, that's a program I'd like to be a part of, and they've went and played there. And then there's a lot of kids that have grown up through the program as well. I just think the expectations understood that, you know, basketball may not be for you, Uniota, if you don't want that bullseye. It kind of comes with the territory. You're not going to win 50 straight and not think it's going to be there. So, you know, I understand the question. You could certainly say that they play tight in certain aspects, but at the same time, I think they understand what they're up against every night, and they continue to find a way to win. I've never bought the whole thing, a loss can get your attention or whatnot, but that's not to say you can't learn from a loss, but I think the teams with great maturity and great understanding, they evaluate themselves, you know, through a process, and the winning kind of takes care of itself. So, you know, I certainly understand some of the nerves and the different things. I think the more situations kids are in, that's why they're able to find ways in the third and fourth quarter to win.
All righty. Well, let's head to the fast break. It's going to be a little different this time. I'll just ask the question and then you can follow it up.
Well, that's fine. I do want to mention here on the Crown Hill Golf Club, they had sent me some texts this week, and they're doing some different packages there on their prepaid rounds, where they have a lot of different sizes of memberships. You know, so, you know, we always think of a membership of paying this large amount for all year long. If you're from the Chillicothe area, it makes a lot of sense. Give them a call, 740-986-4653. They're trying to get some things squared away now. Tell them SVC Sports Talk sent you. Tell them you talked to Shane, and you're anxious to see, this is about how many times you want to get up there and kind of see what kind of package they can put together. I think you certainly will not be disappointed. So, again, that's Crown Hill Golf Club. So, Bruce, let's go ahead and roll with the boys' fast break.
One topic that has not been talked about much is the youth of Zane Trace. Is this a group that compete for a league title in the near future?
Well, I think it depends on what your definition of near future is. You know, throughout next year, obviously Uniota's still going to be really, really good. But yeah, somewhere in their career, there's no doubt. Nick Nesser and Cameron Evans and, you know, the Johnson kid can really, really shoot the three. I was checking out, he's up in the top, I believe it's 5 now, and 3's made, approaching 30. Johnson is, and he can really, really shoot it. And Nestor's only going to get bigger and fill out stronger. But I tell you, the kid, if you remember, Bruce, all the way back to the preview, the kid I've always been high on is Cameron Evans. And I think, you know, he was in the double figures the other night in a non-league game with 3 rebounds, 3 assists. So I think as his minutes start to go up, he's only going to get better and better. Coach Coker teaches the defensive end really well, so you'll see a huge difference in him in the next year or so on that end. And yeah, that's a nice nucleus, along with a couple juniors that are going to be coming back next year. And you know, Zane Trace is always going to have pretty good numbers. I know their JV team's really good. So yeah, I mean, compete for a title, certainly, in the near future, if we stretch it out to, say, a year, year and a half down the road.
We have talked a lot about the parity in the race for second place, but we've not talked much about how it could influence the seeding in this year's sectional tournament. What are your thoughts on this topic?
Well, this is a really intriguing topic because we're getting closer and closer. You know, it's one thing to look at the standings, but then you also have to look at some head-to-head, and you have to look at some overall. You know, right now, Adina has to probably be sitting in that highest Division III spot because they're at 9-4. And even though Paint Valley's at 10-6, Adina's a game up on them in the standings, and Adina has beaten them head-to-head. Now, you say, well, Piketon's 6-3 too, but keep in mind, Piketon is 6-8 overall, but they've also beaten Paint Valley head-to-head. But Paint Valley has the most overall wins at 10, so it's going to be really interesting to see how the coaches sort that out. And obviously, we have another four or five games to sort it out for us, but where you fall between 2, 3, 4, 5 in terms of the standings there could really dictate you being one of those top three or four seeds down there at Waverly compared to maybe dropping into that dreaded 7 through 10. Because keep in mind, Bruce, the 7-10 plays the 2, the 8-9 plays the 1. So really, really going to be intriguing to look at some of those factors. But right now, I would have to give Adina a nod just because, again, they're one game up and they have some of the head-to-head benefiting them as well.
Last week, we talked about some early all-league discussion. There was a lot of mention of Paint Valley's Dylan Swingle, as well as long list of Uniota players. Looking beyond this, who is a player who you feel can still earn a top five spot with a good finish to the season?
Well, it's certainly wide open because we have some basketball to be played. But if you take Swingle and you take the Uniota kids out of the mix, I always look at the standings and I kind of look at how we arrived there. Obviously, Trey Postage at Adina, as I look at the standings, would be a kid that comes to mind. He's a kid that's hit 33 threes and is averaging up over 12 a game. More at Piketon, Trail's only Swingle in the scoring at 16 a game. His team's obviously up there in the standings as well. You know, some of the other scores, DeAndre Vining, Darby Pillow, a Nunnemaker, a Hartman, McCloskey. I guess you'd have to kind of wait and see where their teams fill out. But I would feel like right now, Postage would be in that next slot for me with Moore. Because keep in mind, Moore's teammate Beach is really coming on as well. So I personally do think Swingles are your player of the year. I think there's going to be at least a couple Uniota kids, maybe three. But Trey Postage, as long as Adina stays where they're at, certainly would have a case there.
And that is the boys edition of our Fast Break, brought to you each and every week by Crown Hill Golf Club. As Shane said earlier, just give them a call and talk with them about the many packages they offer to those of us in the Chillicothe area. Now, Shane, we're going to head to our feature topic of the week. This brought to the listeners by C&K Athletic Equipment. You can find them on the web at www.cnkathleticequipment.com. They are your source for local school apparel, fitness gear, sports accessories, headwear, and all kinds of sports equipment. Give them a call, 740-477-9828. Open Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., Saturday, 9 a.m. to 12, closed on Sunday, located at 116 East High Street in Circleville. And we appreciate their patronage as well. So the topic, or the feature topic this week, we're going to talk, and we've talked so much about this in the past, just little tidbits, so maybe we can kind of summarize and maybe explain where we're headed here a little bit. But the topic is Little League, and specifically Little League in basketball. And if you can, kind of bring us up to date on how this has evolved and where we stand now in terms of the discussion.
Well, honestly, Bruce, I feel like it's a topic that I've evolved a lot in. I'm the first to admit there. I went through a time of just bitterness. I went through a time where I was just so bitter with what had happened to Little League basketball, and you couldn't get people to listen, and you couldn't get people just to sit down and talk about it, to the point where it was getting, you know, just going in a bad direction. Well, as a result, you know, as I'm going to fairly state here, as a result, it's helped some, and I'm going to explain that, but it also hurt just the overall product and our numbers to the point where, you know, you knew 5, 6, 7 years later, and here we are 5, 6, 7 years later, that, you know, it's going to start to hurt the junior high numbers. It was going to start to hurt the freshman numbers, the JV numbers, and it certainly has done that. So where I think it's evolved for me is I've tried to just become a better communicator. You know, I have too much love for basketball just to be bitter about something that I feel this passionate about. So what I've tried to do over the last 2 to 3 years is I've really started to try to talk to a lot of different people and get a lot of different opinions and try to learn this new school a little bit and figure out, okay, what is working, what's not working, and then look at some of the old school approach. Now, real quick, just to make sure people understand, because Bruce, you did a good job of kind of asking me this in our pre-show meeting.
Yeah.
When I refer to the new school, I refer to, you know, basically having a third grade, a fourth grade, a fifth grade, a sixth grade team, where you basically, most schools will take somewhere between 8, 10, maybe 12 kids, and they'll go around and they'll play basically just like a junior high team would the rest of the league throughout the winter. And you basically travel your road games, you host your home games there. And that is your little league season, where the old school approach a little bit more would have been the idea of you take throughout your third, fourth, fifth, sixth grade, and different schools did it different ways. You basically would have a variety of teams. Let's just use, say, Zane Trace, for example. Zane Trace would have, you know, 5 or 6 teams maybe in their fifth, sixth grade division. They might have 5 or 6 teams in their third, fourth grade division. So if you were the top 4 players, say, in the sixth grade at Zane Trace, you wouldn't be playing together. You would be playing and leading your own team. Mm-hmm. You'd be on your own Zane Trace Little League team. Am I explaining this well enough, Bruce?
I think so.
Okay.
I mean,
okay. So what was happening, you know, nowadays what happens in the modern is you do get 1 or 2 elite kids maybe to develop at a little quicker pace because they are going out, and you could argue that they're playing in a little bit more of a competitive setting against some other schools. But what's dying off is, one, I think the point guard play is. 2, I think the depth of rosters is, and I think that's hurting our product. Where in the other way, you could argue that maybe it was holding back that quote unquote star, whatever that means in the fifth and sixth grade. Mm-hmm. See, I promised myself I wasn't going to get sarcastic any time here. So Every now and then, Bruce, you got to get on me here.
Okay.
It might be holding them back, but I thought what it was doing was it was helping develop the overall ball skills of all the best players, and it was in keeping more kids involved and making them maybe a little bit more excited for the seventh grade experience. So basically what we've arrived at here, Bruce, is how can we compromise? How can we take the modern day version, and how can we take some of this old school version and figure out, because let's face it, this new way is not going anywhere. You know, because, and the reason I say that is the parents and the players have a lot more power now, or at least more power that they're willing to take. You know, if they're growing up and they're not happy in the fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth grade, they just pack up and leave. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of examples where, you know, kids will play through the little league and they're not happy by the time they're in the fifth or sixth grade. They just pack up and go somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's something that schools, especially the small school, is going to have to tackle. And I think compromise can make this happen.
Okay. So what is the compromise then?
Well, I think let's just start on the one side here. I think with the varsity coaches and the administrators, the thing they have to do is they have to recognize the format and the importance of gym time. They've got to get creative in gym time. They have to get creative in educating coaches. Because keep in mind, it's hard enough, Bruce, to get a 7th and 8th grade basketball coach, mm-hmm. a freshman coach, a JV coach, a varsity assistant. Now all of a sudden we've got to get a 3rd grade coach, a 4th grade coach, a 5th grade coach, a 6th grade coach. And they're coaching, like I said, at a little bit of a higher level because they're taking kids out on the road. They're going against other schools. They're doing some different things. So it's not just in-house. So it's not just your normal parent involvement. It may be not even your high school player involvement or your high school staff, because these things are happening you know, way too spread out to get a lot of those people involved. So I think a couple things the varsity coach and the administrators have to do is they have to really respect the amount of gym time needed, and they really have to educate some coaches and get some different people involved that they can really trust to kind of teach the fundamentals on the run, if you will, because, you know, when they play with some pretty advanced rules in some of these things, and, when you get out there on Sunday and they turn the scoreboard on, it's hard not to want to be competitive. Mm-hmm. So what happens is a lot of times things that I know just in coaching some JV, a lot of times you have to guard against. There are certain things that make you more competitive on the scoreboard that have nothing to do with winning varsity basketball games someday. So that's even more so at the little league level. You have to really have a great maturity and understand that even if it means losing on Sunday, there's certain things that have to be taught and so forth. So that's probably where the varsity coaches come from, is really being supportive and really trying to help the coaches in any way possible. And it does put a lot of extra stuff on your plate because you're in the middle of your own season. But this is something that has to happen, I think.
Okay, so coordinate gym time, obtain coaches, and work with those coaches, right?
Yeah, because I think, too, I guess I'll add on this segment is I think part of this compromise is going to be taking some time in the off season to incorporate some of the old school way. Mm-hmm. Are you able to maybe throughout June, the way the game's grown now anyway, if we're going to grow it this much in season, let's go ahead and grow it out of season. You know, are we able to take through, say, June and July, 7, 8, 9, 10 times to where we can do some camp days? Like, yeah, a lot of times you run your camp in the summer.
Yeah.
I guess what I'm saying is, why can't we run our old school little league programs in the summer? Why can't we take 7, 8, 9, 10 days to where we're doing instruction? We're doing some in-house games. We're doing some different things to where those top 3, 4, 5 players understand what it means to play against each other. They understand what it means to run the point guard on their own team or to lead their own team. So I think there's a lot of value in those things. Plus, what that does is it gets maybe that 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th best player in the grade learning a little bit more how to create their own shot, or the importance of them guarding one of the team's best players, the opponent's best players, those types of things. So I think the time that the varsity coach puts in is going to have to grow.
Yeah.
But I think the off season might be where some of this compromise is on their end to making the old school and the new school mix.
As a parent, though, wouldn't you – I mean, the summers, it seems, are busy enough – putting together vacations and time for this, time for that, and you got baseball and so forth. I mean, how do you reconcile those concerns?
Those are fair points, and I think you realize that it may not be for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you also understand that if you are able to utilize some different days, I think some parents will appreciate how it keeps the kids maybe busy in an organized setting, because there would be very minimal cost in this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wouldn't necessarily be like your camp day. It'd be more just a little league cost maybe, and you would go because. But I think that's part of the compromise. I think parents, the young players, I think they love this new format, because here's what happens, Bruce. You get these people that even if you're going to try to go back to the old school way, you're always going to have one or two players that be like, well, so-and-so over there at Zane Trace or Uni Ode or down there at Pike, and they're playing this, and if we don't do this, we're falling behind. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know if I totally agree with that, but I think you're at a loss trying to argue that. So I think the point is embrace that. Give them those opportunities, help them get better, but let's not lose our instructional time, and let's not lose some of these other opportunities and go. You may not get the total numbers in the summer that you want, but let's face it, you're not getting the numbers at the junior high and freshman and JV level that you want now anyway. So anybody that you would get involved with, it would be a positive mm-hmm. thing. So I guess what basketball would look like is you would have some of these things throughout June and July, and then you'd still have your normal basketball season. And a lot of these things you hope would be in the morning and through the day in the smaller communities. Hopefully you could set up some carpools and some different things to where, you know, a lot of your baseball games are at night, and you're trying to balance all that. So I'm the first to understand it gets busy and different things like that. But I really think if the varsity coaches will compromise with the summer time, and the parents will, and the kids will also compromise with the instruction and the different things in the summer, you can still get a little bit of both, because I just think there's too much value in the old system, and I do understand some of the value in the new system, but I just think that if we don't find a way to bring some of the old school stuff back, we're going to continue to suffer, particularly at the small school. Because keep in mind, here's what people I don't think understand from some bigger schools. There may only be, say at some of these small schools, there may only be like 40 boys in a grade.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if you get 50% of kids, even at a young age, to get involved in something, that's a ton. So if all of a sudden, let's say you even get 15 to 18 of those kids to come out for one sport in mm-hmm. the fourth grade, mm-hmm. that's awfully good. But if all of a sudden you handpick 8, 9, or 10 of them and tell the rest of them to go home.
Yeah, you put a cap on it.
You have absolutely no chance, none, of having numbers in the 7th, 8th, 9th grade for that particular grade. So what happens is you're putting all your eggs in one basket with a group. And what happens is at these small schools, you grow up and about every 3 or 4 years, you'll have this really good class. Well, yeah, they might win their 5th grade championship or their 7th grade championship, but by the time they're sophomores, they're not only competing against sophomores, they're trying to compete against 4 straight grades from Zane Trace or Uniota or from Westfall or so forth. So I think that's what happens. And I think the old Little League style would really help develop some of the better depth. And I think this is a great compromise if we can get a little summer involvement to maybe pick it up.
Okay, we've talked about what the coaches and the administrators have to do. We've talked a little bit about what the parents, the players, and those that love the new format, what to do. And the question it kind of boils down to, I guess, and maybe we should have even started with this, is what should be the ultimate goal of Little League basketball in your mind?
Well, and this is the loaded question.
Yeah,
that probably keeps people from having the great opportunity of really solving the issue, is because you can certainly not argue with 2 or 3 stances that maybe you take. Obviously, with Little League sports, one of the things is to educate our youth through sports, is to give them an opportunity to be a part of a team, to give them an opportunity to understand responsibility. Hey, I got to go to practice. I have a role on this team. To be respectful to my teammates, be respectful to my coaches, still do my homework. I've got to be a student athlete. So that's certainly a stance. If you're asking me strictly from a basketball standpoint, yeah. I guess the way I go on this is the ultimate goal is to figure out how can we, in the process, correlate what we're doing to a future varsity level. So when you're working with a 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th grader, even into freshman and JV, all the way up to JV, and there's not a day I coach right now, and I've been doing this for 20 years, and I've thoroughly enjoyed coaching JV this year for Eric Snyder. There's not a day I coach where I don't think, okay, what does this kid need to be able to do by next year for varsity? Okay, this kid, here's 2 years from varsity. What does she need to be working on? What does she need to do? What does this do? You know, and in a game situation, I just won't do things a lot of times that, you know, even if it is a better strategy for winning or losing, I just won't do things if it doesn't correlate to the varsity level. And I think that's the ultimate goal, is how can we help kids develop their basketball skill on a pace that's going to allow them to develop into the junior high, the freshman, and the JV level. And you also have to do it with an idea of making it fun and making it enjoyable to where the kids want to be a part of it. Because let's face it, right now, the way we're doing it is we're running way too many kids off into 3rd or 4th grade. So you'll hear me say all the time, you better be an incredible eye for talent if you're going to start picking 12 kids in the 3rd grade, because you may not ever get the other kids back.
Don't you think the problem is that not everybody shares that same idea or that same long-term thinking? I mean, I know a lot of parents that get mad when their kid's Little League team hasn't won a game.
Well, there's no question. That's certainly the tough stance. And I think, again, that's where my compromise can go, because the games are going to fuel some, the instruction's going to fuel some, and even if your kid's the star in the 4th, 5th, 6th grade, and again, I don't even know what that means, but if your kid is the star, the instruction in the summer can still be so valuable for them. I see so many really, really good players grow up into the 8th, 9th, 10th grade, and they still have a couple skills that just have never developed. I'm not saying that's Little League's fault or whatever. I'm just saying that I do think we've gotten a lot really game driven at some of the younger levels. And I think maybe the proper work hasn't been put in. But, yeah, sure, it's tough to get people to understand they want to win on Sunday. They want to win that fourth. Hey, you know, you'll hear them say, oh, this group hasn't lost a game through third through sixth grade or whatever. You know, that's great, and it really is. That is. That's awesome. But can it correlate into another 2, 3, 4 years? Has it been done properly to where it can correlate to the high school success at the varsity level? Because from a basketball standpoint, that again is the ultimate goal.
Yeah, I've had a parent recently talk to me about the success of her daughter's team up at the high school ranks, and they were undefeated in 7th and 8th grade. And, you know, you just kind of wonder, did they just try to win the game and did they not develop in certain areas?
Well, and it's tough without knowing the situations,
yeah,
and
is.
We won't call any situation out here. But I would just say this, Bruce. I think I touched on this a second ago. If you are undefeated in the 7th grade, if you're undefeated in the 8th grade, well, if we keep you together at the 9th grade level and all you do is play against 9th grade, there's a good chance you be undefeated again. But what happens is, as you get up to the varsity level, you might be starting 4 sophomores or you might be starting 4 juniors. Well, all of a sudden, you're not just playing the other school's juniors.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're playing their seniors, their juniors, and their sophomores. So there might have been 3 seniors and 3 juniors and 3 sophomores that they developed at their school, and now all of a sudden that team's better than you. So that's why what I would argue, even with small schools, if you have an awesome class, let that class, you know, run the old school format, I'm calling it, in the June and July, and help them to develop those classes underneath, because maybe the class underneath them or the class ahead of them only has 2 or 3 or 4, you know, higher level kids. Well, all of a sudden now, when you incorporate them all into an in-house Little League program, you can still put together some pretty competitive games, and you can still put together, and I still say, you know, if you're playing on that 6th grade team and you're the 3rd, 4th, 5th best player, there's a lot of value of you going out and playing 6, 7, 8 games. And my philosophy there in my June, July series, to where now all of a sudden you're the best player on your team. Now all of a sudden you're not just waiting for so-and-so to take the ball and create you a couple shots a game. You've got to take the ball and you've got to run your team. You've got to guard that best player on the other team. You got to do all these things. You have to have maybe the coach expect a little bit more out of you. And what's going to happen is it's going to raise everybody's game. Then when they come back together in the 7th grade or the 8th grade, now all of the kids in the top 5, 6, 7 have experienced what it's like to handle the ball a little bit more, to take more shots, to guard better players, to do some different things. And I just think that format would work well. So I certainly understand the new format is here to stay. I think we've got to pull from that, and we've got to accept it, and we've got to embrace it. Even if you don't like it, even I've learned to do it, you have to accept it. But you also have to try to get some people to get involved in your in-house Little League and instructional programs to make it both work. And obviously, it's going to be a little bit more time involved. But let's face it, goodness, if people in the 3rd and 4th grade are willing to get in their car every weekend and drive, you know, 30, 40 minutes to other schools, I certainly think they could figure out a way to carpool you an extra 7 or 8 times to your own school in June and July.
Okay. So that is what Shane thinks. Folks, are there those of us that disagree with him? Are there those of us who agree with him? And we would really like to hear your feedback as well. And we'll just in a little bit, we'll talk about how you can provide that feedback. Fans, stay with us. Up next, we head to the girls' side, where the upcoming week should be a complete treat for SVC fans. You're listening to episode 177 of SVC Sports Talk with Bruce Knox and Shane Combs and one absent Mr. Derek Webb, whose birthday is tomorrow, I think. So we surely do appreciate you listening to us. And we're talking girls' side of the basketball leagues right now, and the weather made us wait a little longer for that Uniodo Southeastern matchup, but now we get to see the first of the two meetings this Thursday night at Uniodo. The second meeting will be on February the 2nd at Southeastern. So, Shane, let's have the scouting report. Which team has what in their favor?
Well, I'll tell you, Bruce, these two teams are playing at a really high level. I mean, what a treat for the fans of our league coming up this week. You know, Uniota's really played at an incredible tempo and scoring the ball and getting a lot of balance and a lot of depth over the last 2-3 weeks and beating some really good teams. And then Southeastern, you know, a little bit banged up coming late out of volleyball and soccer, and they were a little banged up, and they had their troubles there with Wheelersburg on opening day, and then since then they haven't had a whole lot of trouble, have they? I mean it's been really impressive. So, you know, in terms of the, you know, what favors, I don't know. I mean, I guess Southeastern's a little older, they're a little bit more battle tested. But Uniota's obviously very talented, very deep. I think, you know, it always starts with Southeastern with Ellis Skeens and Audrey Wheeler. They present such a unique matchup. So the first thing you have to do is figure out how are you going to handle them, you know, and then how you handle them can sometimes dictate, you know, some of the problems or potential problems you run into with their role players. You know, the Mittens being able to knock down some shots, Collins inside on the glass, changing shots, rebounding. Heiss has really come on. Morris is a good player. So, that's what dictates. The one thing that gets overlooked sometimes with Southeastern is you have to make sure that they're not creating easy points off of their pressure. So it's hard enough to guard them and keep them from scoring. You certainly can't let them generate it off of their defense. As for Uniota, I think an interesting point with them is they've been creating so much off of their athleticism and depth. You know, their offensive rebounding. I don't have any stats in front of me, Bruce, but there's no way that basketball team doesn't average 10 to 15 offensive rebounds a night. I mean, they're relentless to the glass. Mm-hmm. They turn you over. They play quick in transition. Even on a made basket, they push it at you quickly. So I guess for me, if Uniota's ball handling is able to handle Southeastern's pressure, and Southeastern's size and athleticism is able to limit, you know, Uniota on the glass, now it kind of turns into a normal basketball game. And what's unique about that is both of these teams haven't had to play a lot of those types of games. Mm-hmm. So it really comes down to an execution thing. It comes down to making some shots, some role players stepping up and doing some of those things. So I think that's what intrigues me the most. Are both of these teams, 80% of the schedule, they just steal the ball from their opponent, or they offensive rebound it from their opponent, and they just almost athletically take it over. I guess for me, it's going to be interesting to see if some of those athleticism points, I call them, are taken away, who can execute just a little bit better in the half court or in some of their different schemes to get some quality looks, and then what group ultimately can get some role players to knock down some shots.
Is that what do you ultimately see as the key to the game, though? Is that kind of along those lines, or is there something else?
Well, I think it is. You know, you'll hear me. I'm a big stat guy. So yeah. You'll hear me a lot of times talk about rebounding and turnovers. Mm-hmm. So what happens is those seem to be the particular stats that lead to more possessions. These are two really highly efficient teams. If you look at our Adena Sports Medicine stat sheet and you go down the field goal percentage on the girls' side, I want to say I was looking at that the other day. We had, 12, 13 kids listed. I don't have it in front of me, but I know like almost 2/3 of them have a U or an SE next to them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're talking about teams, and that's not by coincidence. The reason that is you have kids getting easy shots off of offensive rebounds. You have easy shots where kids have used their individual talent to draw extra defenders and kick it out for shots, or it could just simply be off steals and go. So, you know, what happens is what I'm referring to with rebounding and turnovers, whoever can win those seems to get more shots at the basket. And let's face it, the way these two teams shoot it, more possessions probably going to equal more makes in this particular matchup. So I think those are going to be really important. You know, obviously, I guess Southeastern on paper is your favorite, but I've been thoroughly impressed with this Uniota squad. I think it's going to be a really great game.
Well, we'll know more next week on the In episode 178, of course, we'll have at least one of these good matchups under our belts when we talk.
And it's
again.
Also interesting to look at, you know, Coleman and Cottrell and Stallie and Fisher and all some of these young kids. You know, now that they've had, what, 15 games under their belt, they're far more prepared for this stage. They're going to play Southeastern twice here in the last, you know, third of their schedule. But they're certainly battle tested, and these kids play a high level of basketball throughout the year. So even though they're not, quote unquote, battle tested, maybe in terms of the SEC play, I certainly think they're ready. But again, you know, Skeens and Wheeler and Company obviously have been there, done that. So, yeah, that makes for an intriguing storyline as well.
I'll bet that'll be a good game to watch if you can make it out there to at Unioto on Thursday night. That'll be worth the money for that one, I'll tell you that.
Good question.
Yep. Let's go to the girls' fast break if we can.
Yeah, I want to give a shout out again to Crown Hill Golf Club. I'm telling you, I did it there over the last couple of years, and you will not be disappointed. If you play golf, don't think of a membership to Crown Hill being, oh, that's 50 minutes, an hour away. No, I'm telling you, call 740-986-4653. Over the last couple of weeks, I've been in contact through text, this week through email, even talked to them one time. And if you'll just call and tell them, you listen to SVC Sports Talk, you live in the Chillicothe area, tell them what it is you're kind of expecting out of it. Say, hey, I think I could get up there this many times, see what kind of deal they can give you. I don't think you'll be disappointed at all, and it's certainly worth your time to give them a call. So, well, Bruce, let's go with that Crown Hill Golf Club Girls Fast Break segment.
Who or what has been a great headline that for whatever reason has been overlooked this season on the girls' side?
You know, there's a lot of different ways I can go here. I'm going to say Lexi Woods of Paint Valley. I think what's happened, you know, she had the little preseason injury there, and it was a little bit of a slow start. But as I look at girls basketball here this year, you know, with the Southeastern Unioto, Huntington Piketon there at the top, Zane Trace is a good storyline. You know, here they are at 7-7. But to me, Lexi Woods is one of the really, really good talents. And I think what happens, Bruce, sometimes is when you come through at the same age of an Ella Skeens, it's certainly easy to get overshadowed. But here's a kid that's somewhere in the 85 to 90 points shy of 1,000. She's just a junior. You're talking about a kid that if she can stay healthy is going to push somewhere between the 1,300 and 1,500 mark. And when you look at an all-time rank there on the girls' side, that's the type of career that puts you in the top 20 in the history of our conference. So Lexi Woods, really, really good player in our league. And I think for whatever reason, this year has been overlooked a little bit.
Southeastern's Ella Skeens and Huntington's Braden Collins are not only the top two scorers in the league, they are also the only two to appear in all eight categories of our Adena Sports Medicine SVC leaders. What about these two make them so valuable?
Well, I think it's the obvious of what that stat sheet would tell you. I think over the course of a 32-minute game, they both can impact the game in so many ways. You know what I mean? With Ella Skeens, you're talking about a kid that has scored over 1,300 points and still has, what, you know, 7, 8, 9 games left her junior year. Braden Collins, in her first year of varsity basketball, leads the league in scoring. I updated that this afternoon, I think 22.8. Well, they both can dominate a game without taking a shot. So to think about how many points they score, but then think about what I'm saying, they can dominate it without taking a shot. Skeens can rebound it. She can pass it. She can defend. She can do different things. Braden Collins is also leading the league in steals at like 5 a game. You know, the other day in the Paint Valley game, you know, she just has a knack for it. She, you know, Paint Valley comes back and really has Huntington by the throat, and she just picks a pass off, goes down, lays it in with 5 seconds to go. It's amazing to see across the stat sheet how many different things they can do other than score the basketball. So, you know, they certainly are kids that do a lot to help their team.
The past week has given the SVC fans some great finishes as well as some great non-league wins for our league. Who has been an unsung hero during this stretch?
Well, I think there's been a couple different that maybe you'd look at across the board. I think McKinley Mitten's one that jumps out at me, the 8 points in the Miami Trace game. Obviously, Skeens and Wheeler, as they normally do, lead the way. But her eight, Rachel Collins scores 8 in that game on just 5 shots. Cheyenne Conley of Huntington had a big second half the other day, knocking down 2 threes and then driving to the hoop and score. If she doesn't do that, Huntington doesn't survive the Paint Valley scare. So those are some of the kids. I know maybe not an unsung hero, but Reese Kearns with a career high 13 points there to Dina the other day. So just some things going on across some of the games and the box scores that jump out at me. But it's always neat this time of year to see some of those role players impact the outcomes of games.
And that is the girls segment of the Fast Break, brought to you by Crown Hill Golf Club. Give them a call and tell them Shane Combs at SVC Sports Talk sent you. Hey, Shane, before we go any further, I mentioned earlier that we need feedback, particularly on the Little League thing or anything else, really, that you've heard here, the fans have heard. And so you need to be able to contact Shane and Derek as well, even though he isn't here. But we want to give you some contact information. Shane is available on email at admin1@svcsportszone.com. He also is available on Facebook. Book has 2 profiles there. And you can follow him on Twitter at svcsportszone.com. Derek, who isn't here tonight, but again, I want to remind you that it is his birthday tomorrow. Yeah, it is his birthday tomorrow. He's Derek Webb's available at dwebb@chillicothegazette.com. Tell him, write him an email, tell him happy birthday, and tell him SVC Sports Zone sent him, and you didn't agree with him in episode 177. Maybe that'll get his attention. And then Twitter, he's a good follow. Lots of good information about SVC and about Chillicothe and their league as well. His handle is at DW1509. You can look him up. You can also always leave us a voicemail at DBK Media Services on the listener line. The phone number there, 740-569-3254. And while we're at it, please ask you to subscribe. You can do so through a podcatcher. That's the app that no one knows what it is on the iPhone and the iPads and so forth. You can look for us in the iTunes store. We ask that if you do, you give us a great rating and a favorable review. And then you can also get an email subscription by going to any of the posts on the DBK Media websites, DBK Media Services website, and enter your email address. And we'll send you an email at the time every a new episode is posted. So we're going to move now into our post-game comments, brought to you by C&K Athletic Equipment. Give them a call, 740-477-9828. They are your local school apparel source, and also your source for fitness gear, headwear, sports equipment, and sports accessories. I'm open Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., Saturday, 9 a.m. to 12, and closed on Sunday. So, boy, it's going to be a big week coming up in the SVC, is it not? And what can fans look for?
Well, I think there's a lot of normal things to look for in terms of your feedback to the show, too. I think, you know, you look across the schedule on the girls' side, you have the Piketon-Uniota rematch. Yep. So Tuesday night, there's a league game or a league night for the girls. Thursday, we mentioned, obviously, the show down there with Uniota Southeastern. Then Saturday's the all day event. So, you know, Friday night's a boys night. You come back on Saturday with the all day event. So you have some unique matchups. I want to say, I don't have that in front of me, that would be the Adina Uniota boys matchup, which is always going to be a good one. The Piketon Zane Trace is one of those really pivotal things there in that race for that second, third place spot. And plus what I talked about in terms of sectional seating on down the line. So, you know, all of the normal things are there. In terms of matchups this week, Bruce, I think, I guess for me, if I look at the feedback of the show, I always look forward to hearing basketball topics, and I always look forward to talking. But for me, I'm really intrigued by the Little League conversation. Mm-hmm. It's been taken to so many different down so many different lanes, I guess is the way to say it, over the last 3 or 4 weeks, as I've put it into the show and been doing my work in preparation for this, I really think we're on to something here. I'm not saying we have it ironed out perfect, but I think people that really, really care about the now and the later of SVC basketball really needs to have an opinion, really needs to share that opinion. And we're going to have to compromise a little bit and figure out how to make this work. It, you said it best earlier. It's not going to be easy. It's going to take some time involved. But as we've obviously added a lot to Little League basketball. So anytime you add a lot, there's going to be more time and possibly even money invested. And I know that you've had some unique experiences down the bigger school, and it certainly is a little different at a bigger school to a smaller school and so forth. So, I guess I look forward to hearing that. So anything else you have for me before we get out of here this week, Bruce?
No, it's been a pleasure as always. We look forward to maybe having Derek back next week. But we always enjoy talking SVC sports here on the SVC Sports Talk.
Well, absolutely. Yeah, no question about it. So, appreciate everybody listening in. Let us know the feedback, and we'll get back at it next week. So until that next time, for Triple Crown Family Fun Center in Chillicothe, as well as all the other sponsors on the website, for Bruce Knox and all the people behind the scenes at DBK Media Services, want to give a shout out to Derek Webb, wherever you are this evening. This is Shane Combs reminding you to keep visiting SVCSportZone.com, where we are 100% SVC. 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. And visit SVCSportsZone.com, where we're 100% SVC 100% of the time.